Psalm 139 and verse 1, David writes, "You've searched me, Lord, and you know me. You know when I sit and when I rise. You perceive my thoughts from afar. You discern my going out and my lying down. You are familiar with all of my ways. Before a word is on my tongue, you, Lord, know it completely. You hem me in behind and before, and you lay your hand upon me. Such knowledge is too wonderful for me, too lofty for me to attain. Where can I go from your spirit? Where can I flee from your presence? If I go up to the heavens, you are there. If I make my bed in the depths, you are there. If I rise on the wings of the dawn, if I settle on the far side of the sea, even there your right hand will guide me. Your right hand will hold me fast. If I say, surely the darkness will hide me and the light become night around me, even the darkness will be not dark to you. The night will shine like the day, for the darkness is as light to you. For you created my inmost being. You knit me together in my mother's womb. I praise you because I am fearfully and wonderfully made. Your works are wonderful. I know that full well. My frame was not hidden from you when I was made in the secret place, when I was woven together in the depths of the earth. Your eyes saw my unformed body all the days ordained for me were written in your book before one of them came to be. How precious to me are your thoughts, God. How vast is the sum of them. Were I to count them, they would outnumber the grains of sand. When I awake, I am still with you." I love Psalm 139. I think it's one of the most beautiful psalms there is. It's a personal opinion. But David writes this incredible psalm and expresses so eloquently how he is known by God. How he's known by God. Before a word's on his lips, the thoughts in his head, if he gets up or lies down, any movement he makes, God knows it. There's nowhere he can go to hide from God. There's nowhere he can go to escape from him. God knit him together. Formed him in his mother's womb. It's a privilege for me to introduce to you Favor. But I was not introducing it to God this morning. Because before any of us met her, he knew her. And he made her. And whether she's awake or asleep, my guess is she's awake an awful lot. He knows her. And if she's eating or resting, he knows. And whatever's going on in that little head of hers, whatever thoughts she's thinking, however she's perceiving things, he's fully aware. And I think we live in a point in time, and I'm going to suggest it's probably not just this point in time, but where being known really matters. Where being known really matters. A whole lot of people are judging themselves by their social media following, measuring themselves by likes or friends on Facebook, determining their worth based on who they're associated to. And I want to say to you really simply this morning, God knows you. God knows you. God, the creator of all and the sustainer of all things, knows you. And it's easy for me to read Psalm 139 and think, but that's King David. That's David. I mean, he is a hero of faith. Of course God knit him together in his mother's womb. Of course God knows his movements. He's sort of special, isn't he? So let me draw your attention to a lady in Genesis 16 called Hagar. Hagar's probably best known as Ishmael's mum. She's an Egyptian slave woman. She's Sarai's slave. And 10 years after Abraham's been promised descendants, and he's got no children, in frustration, Sarah says, take Hagar and maybe she'll conceive. Sarah's plan, take Hagar, maybe she'll conceive. So he does, and she does. But Hagar's not delighted about this. And because she's not delighted about it, Sarah's not happy. So Abraham gives Hagar back to Sarah. And Sarah mistreats Hagar. You can read it for yourself in Genesis 16. So this Egyptian slave, who's only recorded in the book because a couple got frustrated waiting on the promise of God, she's only there because she's the slave that's prostituted out by her master, goes on the run. She runs, and God finds her in a desert. She isn't somebody of great significance. She's not somebody who's going to become internationally renowned. She's an Egyptian slave girl who's having a child with her slave master's husband and being abused by her slave master. And God says these words to her, Hagar, where are you? Where have you come from and where are you going? In the desert. He goes looking for her. And then Genesis 16:13. Hagar says of Hagar, she gave this name to the Lord who spoke to her. You are the God who sees me, she said. For I have now seen the one who sees me. There's a woman who's not significant, who doesn't seem to have great importance. She's not even part of the plan. She doesn't conceive the child of promise. She isn't giving birth. To the promise Abraham received. A whole other nation's going to be born out of this. And what strikes her as God comes to her in the desert and speaks all sorts of things about Ishmael and everything that he says in those moments is that God sees her. That God sees her. She doesn't go, "You're the God of great promises." Let me read Genesis 16 to you. Verse 7 says, "The angel of the Lord found Hagar near a spring in the desert. It was the spring that is beside the road to Shur. And he said, 'Hagar, slave of Sarai, where have you come from and where are you going?' 'I'm running away from my mistress Sarai,' she answered. Then the angel of the Lord told her, 'Go back to your mistress and submit to her.' The angel added, 'I will increase your descendants so much that they will be too numerous to count.' The angel of the Lord also said to her, 'You are now pregnant and you will give birth to a son. You shall name him Ishmael, for the Lord has heard your misery. He will be a wild donkey of a man. His hand will be against everyone and everyone's hand against him, and he will live in hostility towards all his brothers.' She gave this name to the Lord who spoke to her, 'You're the God who sees me.' For she said, 'I have now seen the one who sees me.'" What mattered to Hagar wasn't what Ishmael was promised. It wasn't the fact that she was going to have descendants too numerous to count. It wasn't all that God spoke to her in those moments. It's the fact she was seen. It's the fact she was seen. This woman who should have been anonymous, God followed her into the desert, found her at a spring, spoke to her, and was invested enough in her life to give her direction. And in thinking of Hagar, I'm drawn to John chapter 4, to a woman sitting at a well. Let me read the account to you again. I feel like I've been here a good bit recently, but hey. John 4 and verse 1 says, "Now Jesus learned that the Pharisees had heard that he was going, gaining and baptizing more disciples than John, although in fact it was not Jesus who baptized but his disciples. So he left Judea and went back once more to Galilee. Now he had to go through Samaria. So he came to a town in Samaria called Sychar, near the plot of ground Jacob had given to his son Joseph. Jacob's well was there, and Jesus, tired as he was from the journey, sat down by the well. It was about noon. When a Samaritan woman came to draw water, Jesus said to her, 'Will you give me a drink?' His disciples had gone into the town to buy food. The Samaritan woman said to him, 'You are a Jew and I'm a Samaritan woman. How can you ask me for a drink? For Jews do not associate with Samaritans.' Jesus answered her, 'If you knew the gift of God and who it is who asks you for a drink, you would have asked him and he would have given you living water. Sir,' the woman said, 'you've nothing to draw water with and the well is deep. Where can you get this living water? Are you greater than our father Jacob, who gave us the well and drank from it himself, as did also his sons and his livestock?' Jesus answered, 'Everyone who drinks this water will be thirsty again. But whoever drinks the water I give them will never thirst. Indeed, the water I give them will become in them a spring of water welling up to eternal life.' The woman said to him, 'Sir, give me this water so that I won't get thirsty and have to keep coming here to draw water.' He told her, 'Go and call your husband and come back.' 'I have no husband,' she replied. Jesus said to her, 'You are right when you say you have no husband. The fact is you've had five husbands, and the man you're now with is not your husband. What you've just said is quite true.' 'Sir,' the woman said, 'I can see that you're a prophet. Our ancestors worshipped on this mountain, but you Jews claim that the place we must worship is in Jerusalem.' 'Woman,' Jesus replied, 'believe me, a time is coming when you will worship the Father neither on this mountain nor in Jerusalem. You Samaritans worship what you do not know. We worship what we do know, for salvation is from the Jews. Yet a time is coming and has now come when the true worshippers will worship the Father in spirit and in truth. For they are the kind of worshippers the Father seeks. God is spirit, and his worshippers must worship him in spirit and truth. The woman said, I know that the Messiah called Christ is coming. When he comes, he will explain everything to us. Then Jesus declared, I, the one speaking to you, am he. Just then his disciples returned and were surprised to find him talking with a woman. But no one asked, what do you want or why are you talking with her? Then leaving her water jar, the woman went back to town and said to the people, come see a man who told me everything I ever did. Could this be the Messiah? They came out of the town and made their way toward him. I don't know what you would have told people about your encounter with Jesus at the well. I don't know what you might have said. Jesus very clearly says he's the Messiah. He refers to himself as the gift of God. But when she says, I know the Messiah's coming, he says, that's me. Jesus talks about living water. The fact that he can offer her water so she will never thirst again. And they have a whole discussion around worship. Yet what she goes to tell people is, come see someone who told me everything I did. Let me paraphrase it my way. Come see someone who knows me. Come see someone who knows me. Could this be the Messiah? What mattered most to her is apparently a clause that they had built into something where he was offering her living water. She said, I want the living water. He said, go and get your husband. Well, I don't have a husband. No, you've had five. And the one you've got now is not yours. Nothing else is said in what's recorded for us about who she is or what she's done. But Jesus knew her. Come see a man who told me everything I've ever done. Could this be the Messiah? And I think we're great at making pronouncements about who Jesus is. I think we're great at telling people he's the bread of life, the Prince of Peace, the King of Kings. He is the Savior, the Redeemer, the Baptizer in the Holy Spirit, and the soon coming King. And I think we're great at making assertions about what he can do. There's living water available that you'll never thirst again. He can give you peace that surpasses understanding. He can transform your life. And I think we're even good at dealing with people's questions and apologetics. She wants to know about worship. He's engaged with her about worship. But what made the difference to her, what her testimony was when she left, was there was a man who knows me. There's a man who knows me. The same way that Hagar sits in the desert, pregnant. And what she calls God is the God who sees me. There's somebody who knows me, who identifies me, the individual, who's not trying to make a blanket statement, but sees me, perceives my thoughts from afar. Before a word is on my tongue, knows it completely. Knows when I get up and when I lie down. And I wonder, when people encounter us, do we reflect a God that knows them? That's concerned with their well-being? That's committed to their good? That sees them in their wilderness? That it, sitting by a well, identifies who they are and tells them who they are? I believe God cares about the details of people's lives. I believe he knows them. I believe he's committed to understanding everything that's going on for you right now in your circumstances. The hairs on your head are numbered. And yet I wonder if that translates into my life. Jesus' instruction is, as I have loved you, so you must love one another. I'm going to tell you, it's easy to love people from a distance. It's easy to love people from afar. It's easy to feel loving when you don't know somebody. If all we do is say hi and how are you in passing, it's easy for me to feel positive thoughts towards you. But the closer we get, the more friction's going to be created sometimes. The more I'm going to see some of who you are, the more actually I'm going to recognize some of your limitation, and you're going to see some of mine. And so we tend to keep an arm's length distance. But I want to urge you this morning. God cares about the details of other people's lives. And I'm going to suggest you that you should too. I want Favor to grow up in a community of people who are invested in one another, who care about each other's success, who are committed to seeing the growth and development of others. I want her to grow up in a church where people come and they know they are known, they are seen, and they are loved. But that requires something of me. And I think it matters. And some of you have already heard me talk about it a little bit. But there's a God in heaven who chases after slaves in the desert and sees them. Who sits with Samaritan women at a well and shows them they're known. Who looks at a man up a tree and says, Zacchaeus, I'm coming home with you tonight. What does it look like to be his ambassadors on earth right now? What does it look like to show people they're known, seen, and loved? Jesus' expectation was that the disciples would be recognized as his by their love for one another. That it would be distinct and different from friendships in the world. That it would look different than how other people engage they will know you are my disciples by how you love one another. I'm going to suggest to you that's not the reality of church most of the time. Sometimes we're worse at loving people, if we're honest. We had the privilege this morning to dedicate a little girl, recognizing God created her. He made her. And he has a plan for her life. And I'm committed to the success of that plan. I'm committed to supporting Wisdom and Christabel as they seek to raise this little girl, to upholding them practically and prayerfully. But actually, I might need to get to know some stuff first. I might need to just get to know them. And we took time last week to eat together. And we'll take time again this week to eat together, thanks to Wisdom and Christabel. The purpose of that isn't just to satisfy your stomach. It's because I have a conviction that people need to be known and seen. That as people come here, there needs to be those of us who say, I am going to invest in their lives because God cares. I'm going to identify them. I'm going to uphold them and support them in whatever way I can. I want them to know they're seen and loved. Time's gone, so I'll shut up. You are known to God. But so is everybody else in this room. And the truth is, most of us are not that much alike. In fact, there are great and significant differences between some of us. Can I urge you, invest in the lives of each other. Get to know one another. I pray this is always a place where people know they're known and seen. I pray that we are great examples of people who walk with a God who sees and knows people. And some of that I want to be supernatural. Some of that I want, words of knowledge. I want to sit at a well with somebody. I don't know if I'll ever sit at a well with somebody, but you know what I mean. And say, where's your husband? And then go, well, actually, I know the story. You don't have to explain it to me. But also, I want to care enough to take time to ask. To stop and to listen. To say, hey, do you want a coffee? Because you're seen and known by God. And if I can uphold you and support you, I want to do that. We're going to break bread together. Recognizing those he foreknew, he also predestined. He knew you. That before the foundation of the world was laid, he had a plan for your life. And part of that plan was sending his son to die for you. So let's eat and drink together in remembrance of him.